The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only.
This is Amanda LaPlante. You're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRH 92.9 FM. You know, I spent decades battling chronic mental and physical health issues, and it took a multitude of approaches to get over that. And there were a lot of things that I struggled with during that time, one of which was emotional eating. And learning to eat from a more intuitive place and be more in touch with and settled into my body and have my relationship with food be healed was absolutely just integral to my healing. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited to have here with me today, Shannon Bisher. Shannon, your business is Hayes Nutrition, correct?
Yes, that's my maiden name.
Okay, Shannon yeah. Hayes Bisher. And she is an MS, RD, LD, a registered and licensed dietitian, intuitive eating counselor, and health at every size activist. I love that. She's passionate about helping people stop dieting, recover from disordered eating, and make peace with food and their bodies. Shannon has a private practice in Chesterfield where she sees clients as well as offers workshops and talks on developing a healthier relationship with food. I'm so excited that you're
here
today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for the work that you do. You know, so you're a registered and licensed dietitian, but you come at things from a very different angle than what I think we typically would think of for a dietitian.
Yeah.
How and when did that transition occur for you?
Well, I think a big part was when I started working with eating disorders. It's looking at you're approaching this relationship with food, and it was very different than what I was taught. Like going to school as a dietitian, you're taught to fix people who are overweight. I wasn't taught a whole lot about eating disorders, but you're coming at it from such a practical standpoint. So a lot of it was learning through cases that I saw, from patients that I saw, from mentors, as well as I spent a couple years working at McAllen Place, which is a local eating disorder center here, where I just learned a ton with working with a therapist, the doctors there. It's a lot of making mistakes and seeing what worked and what didn't, and my own healing with body image and food, just looking at the culture that we live in. And so really kind of shifting to become more of a nutrition therapist, using the skills as a dietitian, but also some of these other therapeutic models to approach that.
So tell me a little bit about your journey through your own body image issues and how that's affected you.
Yeah, so a lot of it I didn't realize was happening. It's kind of looking at, I think my career chose me for that healing piece. I grew up with a twin sister who was always in a larger body, and I was always in a smaller body, and didn't realize, like, I just always got praise for that. That was just kind of how I was. I was an athlete in college. And then when I came out of college and was a dietitian, I did my internship and also then became a personal trainer. So I got a lot of attention and didn't really realize how it was reinforcing, like, oh, you get clients because you're fit. So body matters, body matters. And the same with when I was working with eating disorders, like my body mattered because I kept them safe. Like if I had a fit body, then that was safe to see me. So it was kind of not realizing that there was this pressure until I was delving more into my own work and really looking at, like, this, I really do have these issues. Like, this is this thing that I didn't realize was there. So in, I think, recognizing a lot of when I was transitioning into working more with intuitive eating, it was looking at how much culture supported, I'm a dietitian, and I'm a dietitian that's now a mother, and it's like having to keep this fit persona and keeping that identity along with this identity that was there all through my childhood and growing up. Just admitting that and just working through that and letting go of that, I think allowed there to be so much more healing, which allows me to show up so differently, I think, for my clients.
You know, I love where you touched on something that I deal with too, where, you know, people look at me and they go, oh yeah, okay, yeah, you're fit. I will work with you because you can help me to look. Health at every size is so meaningful, and it does matter. Just tell me more about, yeah, Health at Every Size Advocate. What does that mean?
So it's basically looking at, you can be healthy regardless of the size of your body. So we look at, like, someone could be very underweight and be really unhealthy. Someone can be deemed as considered overweight or being in a larger body, and they can be perfectly healthy. But because of the weight stigma that exists in our culture, there's all this stigma. There's a stigma of, like, they must be unhealthy and they must be lazy and all these connotations that I think people that they associate with someone who's in a larger body.
Absolutely. You know, and even just thinking about, we need a certain amount of body fat on us.
Yes.
Right? I got a little too thin a few months ago, sort of intentionally, but also just stress and things like that were just really taking a toll. And I didn't even realize how much at the time until, you know, I was sitting there coaching clients. And then at once I realized I needed to check in with myself about a lot of the things that I was saying, right? There's so much mirroring that I think happens. I don't know if you experience
yes,
that,
100%.
But it's like, oh, okay. And we're talking and note to self.
Yeah.
You know, but what I realized was I had lost about 5 pounds. And during that time, you know, my menstrual cycles had changed. My energy level had changed. I wasn't sleeping as well. Like, it was really having an impact on my hormones. Mm-hmm. And as I was doing more research on hormone balance and how to get myself back to equilibrium, I realized that it was this weight loss that had happened. So over the last, you know, few months, I've actually put that 5 pounds back on. I maybe could use a couple more. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because I found myself looking in the mirror and seeing dimples where there weren't dimples before, or things have shifted. And that's hard.
Yeah. And, you know, this is such a hot topic that's coming up so much with so many of my clients, because we look at, now we're in summer and we've just come off of quarantine. Most people have gained some weight because of the emotional eating that's associated, that's been with quarantine. But we're also, we live in a culture that tells us as women, we're not supposed to have cellulite, because then look at all these creams that you can buy to get rid of it. We're not supposed to have curves and weight, where that's just the natural look of women. Like, we're supposed to have that stuff, but our culture has deemed that as, like, evil and, like, the worst thing possible to happen.
Well, and we should be very specific. It's our culture. If we look back at art through the
yes,
ages,
it's such a great
women
example.
Were a little lumpy.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And not to say that, you know, of course it does matter. We've definitely seen, you know, watching the percentage of body fat so it doesn't get out of control, because mm-hmm. then there can be adverse health effects.
Right.
However, you know, really being more reasonable about what's realistic mm-hmm. and what's really healthy. What does healthy even mean?
Right. And that's different for every person. So that's this part where we kind of look at the BMI standards, looking at what maybe looks like this should be acceptable for my height and for my height, this is what the weight should be. But it's always looking at, but how's your head? Are you thinking about food a lot? Is there a lot of consuming thoughts, obsessional thoughts? Do you have to restrict a lot to be at that weight, or work out in such an intense way that it's more punitive than pleasurable? Like, there's so many parameters that you have to look at. And this is the relationship piece where we look at food and exercise and just well-being.
Absolutely. All right. So we've talked a little bit about our diet culture and how it's impacting us. You know, we're also living in a time where, I mean, the world, to say that things are stressful would be a mm-hmm. vast understatement.
Yes.
Vast. So, you know, with regard to emotional eating, I feel like it's at an all-time high for many of us. How do you approach that with your clients?
Yeah.
Where do you start?
Well, just the permission for it to be there, that it's okay. One of the biggest things with emotional eating is there's often the fight of, like, I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. And we have to look at, especially during quarantine, food was playing a lot of roles. It was filling so many spaces because it was excitement. It was pleasure. It's consistent. It's something to look forward to. It's the reward. So, you know, I think this experience can also be reflective of, does food exist like that on a normal basis? So I have found that if people had even just maybe smaller issues with food, they got really blown up during this time. But it also presents really great data to look at in your relationship. So when we're looking at the emotional eating, it's really just being aware. So I come at it from the stance of, can you just be aware when you're emotionally eating? So you're bringing more consciousness to the eating versus it's just happening. So when you're bringing more awareness, then you can accept the fact that those things are happening. So yes, I am using it as a reward. Well, now we can look at it. Now we can look at, well, how does it feel that you're using it as a reward? Does it really reward you? Does it really give you what you're wanting? What else could you be needing instead? So we're able to look at what really is that emotional hunger that's there versus the food that's filling that space.
Oh, I love that. That hits home. And you're also a mom.
Mm-hmm. Four times over. Okay. And you touched on something there. You know, are we using food as a reward? And I know that, you know, with kids especially, it's interesting to navigate that territory.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, I'm always, for like my kids, you know, I think using food as some reward is normal. But it's not like an always, you know, it's, I think that's this part of kind of looking at how do we make it neutral? It's figuring out, can there be other sources of reward? If we need to make a reward, you know, and very much keeping the in check of the emotion. So like, I know like when my daughter's been really unhappy or sad about something and she'll ask like, well, can we go get ice cream? And I always counter like, well, we don't use food to soothe emotion. Like, it's okay to want that, but we need to make sure we're calm inside and then we can have the ice cream. Like, it's making that distinct difference that the ice cream isn't to bury the emotion, but more to look at, we can still have it, but let's deal with the emotion first versus it getting swallowed up with ice cream.
Oh, 100%. I love that. All right. So we're talking, you know, so we've talked about emotional eating. How does that differ and compare to intuitive eating? How do you lead people toward intuitive eating? What does that mean to you?
Yeah. So intuitive eating is really being in touch with your body. So if we look at someone who emotionally eats tends to also be a dieter. Those tend to go pretty much hand in hand because dieting actually creates more emotional eating. It's kind of the ebb and flow of it. So when we're looking at intuitive eating, it's all about connecting within. So are they aware of hunger? Are they aware of fullness? Often those two are the hardest parts. And that's a big part of intuitive eating is I can eat when I'm hungry. I can stop when I'm full. I can stop when I'm satisfied, which that's a really hard one for a lot of people to figure out. Like I know what extreme fullness feels like, but just to sit and say, I feel pleasantly full, that's really difficult. So when we're looking at the intuitive eating approach, I'm going to look at what's your permission like with food. Do you have open permission for eating? Are there certain foods that you might be eating emotionally because you've eaten them out of deprivation? So it's how do we have permission, slow down the eating process, connecting in, being more mindful. And to look at these ways you might be disconnecting and kind of coming, what I call kind of coming out of your body and using more of the rigidity of rules versus, but what does your body say? Like, how are we creating more of a trusting relationship with body in order for you to hear hunger, to hear fullness, to work on permission, and to look at, can you figure out what it's like to feel satisfied? What is it like to eat a food that maybe you've deemed to be bad and to sit with the guilt, to not use exercise as a punishment or a restriction as the kind of helping to get rid of it. You know, it's figuring out the ways you might be using behaviors that's diet culture. I mean, we're actually taught that those are okay. So a lot of times when I'm talking to people about intuitive eating, they're like, what? I'm supposed to go against all of these rules I've been taught? Like, it's mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing was the word I would use. You know, I had a doctor on last week, Dr. Kaylee Boutwell, and she made a comment. She said, you know, we need to start treating our bodies like a chemistry set instead of a bank account.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yes. Well, so I'm so much about take the data. What does your body tell you? So like if you have donuts in the morning, well, how do you feel? Do you feel sluggish? Do you feel energized? Like, that's data. It doesn't make the food right or wrong, but maybe more looking at like, do you need to put something? Because I have donuts every weekend with my kids, but I know if I have just that, I feel like crap. So I need to put something with it that has more protein to help balance things out. And because I have that permission, then I'm not going and eating 10 donuts. Like, it's so much about dropping in and looking at, can I give myself the permission that these foods are pleasurable, that that's actually okay. I actually have a client right now that I'm seeing that was a big thing that we talk about is the setup of like, well, I think this is bad. So then I've already ruined the morning. So like, I'm definitely going to have the bacon cheeseburger and the fries for lunch. And it's just this carryover of the all or nothing thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Off the wagon and running to catch up.
Completely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I get that. And see, whereas with me, with all of my autoimmune conditions, I can't even think about a donut.
Mm-hmm.
I miss the days when I could think about a donut. But, you know, I know for myself that would destroy me. But, you know, I've also had to make some, I'll digress at that. I was going to say, you know, we've had some interesting discussions at my house with my son and my husband who still want to enjoy those foods from time to time, but then they kind of feel bad eating in front of me and so on. There are a lot of emotions attached to food, I guess, is where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
On so many levels, this conversation resonates.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I actually see quite a few people who have autoimmune, and that's where it's coming to working on the relationship part with food to look at, instead of it being something I can't have, it's knowing that honoring my body is to not have it. And that's a huge shift in working through that.
Massive. And when I finally got to that place to where I can go to a birthday party, people can eat in front of me with, you know, their cake and their pizza and whatever, and I'm okay with it.
Yep.
It's okay. Yep. You know, there was a long time where I would go, and that was a hard situation for me to be in, but I've been able to release that. And that's, eat to live kind of a situation, really honor my body.
Yep.
So I love that. All right. So a lot of different eating behaviors have been going on over the last few weeks. How does stress affect our ability to check in with ourselves physically and mentally about food?
Oh, it's a complete block. I mean, it really does make a huge impact. I mean, we kind of look at when we're coming off of the pandemic and it's this unseen threat, our systems shut down. You know, when we have threat, normally it's something that we can see, so we can be more in a fight and flight place. But when we're shut down, we're really not able to be connected into hunger and fullness. Like, we're either shut off or we want to fill so much space. So I think a lot of people have had a hard time with either not feeling hungry at all to then just feeling like they're eating to eat, but their body's also trying to make up for the fact that, like, you've been shut down and I need nourishment, so feed me. And if we're emotional, most people are tending not to, I'm imagining, like what I've seen mostly with my clients, like they're not going for the fruits and vegetables, they're going more for the, you know, the grains and the foods that are more comfort foods, because that's what they're needing. And so that's this piece of, when you're stressed, we can look at these varying degrees of stress. So we're in high stress, we're coming off high stress, and for some, we're still in that. How are you taking care of your body? Are you practicing things that can allow you to be in your body? As well as giving yourself permission of maybe more of what you need, which might mean more rest, more stillness, maybe more meditation, more mindfulness. Just treating yourself in a different way than go, 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 because that's a different form of stress, right? And we can still be very disconnected and out of our body because we're working, and then we're doing the kids here, and we're doing this, and we're doing this. And so then there's a time factor where I didn't have time to eat, I'm just too stressed out. So it plays a big part. So a big piece is just to kind of slow down and look at, am I making space for food? Am I honoring the space that I need to make for food? Because then that's honoring my body, and that's creating more of a relationship piece where I'm welcoming the space for the food. And that can be hard if food has been war, if it's been really difficult, if it's been like, I don't know what to eat, and so it feels difficult if I have to make that choice. You know, that within itself can be stressful.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All of those mindset pieces can all add up.
Yes.
Okay. And I want to kind of take a sidestep here and share a story. You know, I had a very good friend that I grew up with who she was bulimic, and she did succumb to the disease after many years of battling it back when we were first year of college. And, you know, I guess I don't even, you know, it's so emotional that I don't even know where to go with it, to be honest with you. But it touches my heart to know that there are people out there who are struggling with this. Yeah. And, you know, are there conditions such as that in which, you know, leptin and ghrelin and, you know, all these different hormones and chemical signals that, you know, that they just shift, they change? Like, how do these diseases work, I guess, is where I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's many facets of it. I think a lot of times there's always a pre-existing condition. So oftentimes there's anxiety or depression, bipolar, or other mental illness. There's a lot that's associated even too with just how is attachment growing up? How are emotions when growing up? Is there permission? So when we look at with restriction, with, let's say, full-blown of anorexia or even with the bulimia, there's a physical sensation. So when we look at with bulimia, a lot of times, you know, the whole act of the binge and then the release. So it can be where, did you feel like you had a lot of control with emotion, that you could express emotion, or were your emotions deemed bad? What do you do with that? So if I feel bad and then I'm going to binge, and then it's this release of the purge, which can either feel like that feels good, like in the moment it feels good, but it's also this punitive piece. It's this punishing of your body. It's I'm not worthy. It's so much of worthiness is locked into an eating disorder. And it's there is so much attention on body, which that's a part. It's definitely looking at what was relationship with body like, how was body talked about, but it's also looking at, were you allowed to take up space? Were you seen? And not in that physical sense, but emotionally. Like, there's so much with attachment theory and eating disorders that are so linked together.
Wow. Okay.
As well as trauma. Like, that part plays a significant piece into it.
100%.
So it's so much more layered than I think, like, when someone hears about an eating disorder, whether it's anorexia or bulimia, it's like, oh, well, yeah, look at them. Or they don't look like they have an eating disorder because they only make it about weight. And it's just so much more about that interpersonal relationship with self and how they feel. And that's where the healing really has to be concentrated on.
And that's exactly what I was hoping you would share.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, you've gone through a transition in your business, so you spent many years working with clients that had severely disordered eating, mm-hmm. and now you've transitioned into a more intuitive eating mm-hmm. space, yep. right? So tell me a little bit about your new training with that and where you've been going in your practice over these last few years.
Yeah, so I got to the point when I was, it was actually like shortly before I got pregnant with my surprise number four, shifting my practice more towards an intuitive approach, but not realizing, like, I enjoyed working with eating disorders and I was good at it and I'm still good at it, but it's hard. It's really hard work. And so the transition was doing the training with Evelyn Triboli, who's one of the co-authors of the book Intuitive Eating. So that's a great start point for people who are interested in intuitive eating, is to read the book, get the workbook. They're both fantastic. So when I did the training, I realized this shift of helping more people. So I felt like within my practice, it was a very small population of people. And it was impactful, but I could see that there were people who were struggling with dieting, that sort of thing, that needed more. So the intuitive eating approach allows that. It helps people who are more disordered with eating, which is a good majority of our population with our diet culture. So it's more kind of being able to, I think, to help more people in that way.
So when if someone calls you, wants to work with you, you know that they have this need to learn more intuitive eating practices, where do you start?
So it's different for everyone. I mean, mm-hmm. When I sit down with someone and take their assessment, it's kind of looking at where they're at. So a lot of times it's starting with logistics, like, okay, what's your eating pattern like? What might be behaviors that are setting you up to maybe be overeating or undereating? Set you up maybe for emotional eating to happen. So that's where we start. And then it's kind of diving more into how is this relationship developed? How are emotions around food, emotions around body? How would it be like just to sit with doing something that felt uncomfortable and take data, be curious, and very much about having a very compassionate curiosity towards these shifts, these changes. What would it be like to look at these things differently or to change this behavior? How does it feel? Kind of checking in of like, oh, this feels so much kinder. But then I met with, but is this okay? Like, that's such the common response.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I love that you are a very collaborative practitioner,
yes.
I've noticed.
Yes.
We were connected through Gateway Wellness Associates, yep. in St. Yep. Louis, by the way. Amazing. Check
yes.
them out, GWA-STL. So you have been working with counselors and therapists mm-hmm. to help them. And tell us more about that work.
Yeah, well, it has to be a collaborative approach. I mean, I think when we're looking at your relationship with food, it is relationship with self. So, I mean, a part is like staying in my lane of knowing what I can do and how I can help someone. But a lot of it is that deeper dive. It's the deeper dive into relationship with self that's showing up with boundaries, with being a pleaser or trauma. Like, it's those are things where it's such a beautiful combination when someone's seeing a therapist in addition to doing our work.
Oh, I would love to do a whole other episode about that.
Yes.
Just dive into all of those, 90% of which apply to me. So, at least 90%. So in your own journey, you know, how are things today?
They're good. I feel like I feel so fortunate to be able to have situations like this, to be able to spread such an important message. I feel very passionate about spreading the message of just self-acceptance and just taking good care of your body and honoring your body in a different way. And I know, like, for me, that's been such a healing piece in my own journey with where I sit with my body. And just seeing that, that's one thing I feel like with knowing that I had food stuff, body stuff, a lot of like exercise stuff, to have more healing with that. There's such an understanding of when someone comes into my office and I'm sitting, it's like, yeah, I can really identify with that. But I think that's a part of the process.
Yeah, I love that. And it makes you a much stronger healer, I think, to have that kind of empathy.
Yep.
It's just amazing to know that you know.
Yep.
How can people reach out to you if they'd like to get started or find out more?
Yeah, so you can go to my website. That's hazenutrition.com. I'm also on Facebook at Haze Nutrition, as well as Instagram at Shannon Bisher.
Okay, and you work with people one-on-one, but you've got a few new things on the forefront.
Yeah, so it's cooking, but it's cooking. I am going to be starting to do more online groups and online coursework. I want to have more where I can impact more people, and I feel like that's a really great vehicle to do. So I'm in the process of developing online material, so that will be up and coming, hopefully by fall.
Awesome, and of course, always available for lectures, talks.
Yes.
Okay, yep. And how are you looking for those opportunities these days? Do you have... I guess with COVID hitting, it's interesting, right?
I know,
are there more
is.
Things online that you're doing, or,
yes.
or how are you?
Yeah. Well,
how are you getting out there?
That's seeming to be the vehicle right now, is a lot of online stuff. Before all this hit, I was doing a lot of going in and doing lectures and talks and that sort of thing. So I'm really open to the opportunities that come.
Yeah, all in the transition. Well, and I know that lots of opportunities will be coming and continue to come because you do wonderful work. And thank you so much, Shannon Haze Bisher, for being here today. Check her out, Haze Nutrition. And just really appreciate you.
Thanks so much.
This has been Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRH 92.9 FM. I'm an integrative health coach. I work with several different MDs in the area that are specialists, and we just try to help people to find the diet and lifestyle that's going to work right for them and live their absolute best life by tuning in to themselves. If that resonates with you, reach out. I'd love to help you get connected with a wonderful practitioner, and go make it a great day. Do good things. Thank you.